You're the Peer Podcast with Leo Battari, Season 1, Episode 14. Hi, I'm Randy Cantrell. Welcome to the Year of the Peer Podcast with Leo Battari. This podcast is based on a simple truth. Who you surround yourself with matters. Author and keynote speaker Leo Battari will interview thought leaders from all walks of life who will share how they leverage peer advantage and show you how engaging your peers more purposefully can hold the key to greater success in business and in life. Today's guest is Pat Waters. Pat Waters is the Chief Human Resources Officer at LinkedIn. Since 2013, in addition to hiring, retaining, and inspiring top talent, Pat is responsible for all employee-related HR programs, including compensation and benefits, and performance management. She came to LinkedIn from Plaintronix, where she was Senior Vice President of Human Resources. From August 2011 until August 2012, Pat also served as the HR Executive Advisor to Twitter. Previously, Pat held senior leadership positions at Yahoo, Align Technologies, Applied Materials, Merck Pharmaceutical, Viacom International, and Calvin Klein Cosmetics. She holds a Bachelor of Science in Business Administration from Ramapo College with a major in Human Resources Management and a minor in Psychology. We welcome Pat to the program.
Pat Waters, welcome to the show. I'm so thrilled to have you here today.
Thank you. I'm excited. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, it's great stuff. You know, as I mentioned to you, I mean, LinkedIn is a real favorite platform of mine. Certainly, I'm as active or more active on LinkedIn than anywhere when it comes to a place where I want to connect and collaborate with professionals. It's just really the place to be. So, but as you're probably aware, of course, declared this year the year of the peer. It's, you know, when you consider a lot of the data that's come up, particularly recently with the Edelman Trust Barometer and how, you know, when we don't trust institutions, we really have to rely on one another and connect with one another more than ever. And I think that's a kind of valuable part of, you know, what we're trying to really talk about this year. Of course, you know, LinkedIn does a whole lot when it comes to helping people connect and collaborate. But I'd really love to start with you. And for you, you know, in the intro, we described what you do. But I'd love, in your own words, to describe how you see your role in LinkedIn. And I want to really focus particularly, as we talked about, on, you know, identifying the right people to, you know, come into a fast-growing organization and be able to work well together. So I will turn it over to you.
All right. So what I do at LinkedIn is, I guess most people understand HR as a function. We call it talent here at LinkedIn, so head of talent. And so I'm responsible for the full ecosystem of hiring, motivating, retaining talent, developing talent, paying talent, you know, exiting the talent as appropriate. So I got the full spectrum. My mission at LinkedIn is to create and enable a high-performing, healthy company that scales. And healthy is a word I used specifically to call out the type of culture we have. Is it engaged? Is it respectful? Is it a destination where you'd be better served by having worked at LinkedIn versus somewhere else? We think our culture sets us apart. So that's healthy. It's beyond the wellness programs. It's beyond, you know, the healthcare plan, so to speak. I mean, it's part of it, but that's not really what I was driving at. So that's my mission at LinkedIn. That is what I do at LinkedIn. And then I run a team at LinkedIn, about 470 some odd employees, over half are recruiters. So when you talk about you talk about, you know, selecting talent and how I look to select my own team and what I look for in leaders and with employees in general for LinkedIn, that's something we talk about and engage upon quite often at meetings. So happy to go into that.
Yeah, well, let's start by, how would you describe your culture, you know, beyond those things that you talked about? How would you put words to that?
So, I mean, we have, you know, operating with integrity, act like an owner, open, honest, construct. We have certain principles and values in our culture. But if you were to walk the halls, I mean, what you would feel coming through my hallway and when you left LinkedIn is the collegial nature of it. The fact that people smile, the higher energy level, the curiosity, the excitement where I'm changing the world, and the compassion. So highly compassionate organization. We don't let each other fail. If we see someone struggling, we offer to help, we network, we help each other be greater at our job every day. So that's a big deal. You know, you don't find a compassionate work environment very often, and we seem to have that at LinkedIn.
You know, and finding the right people is tough, particularly when we're, you know, working off resumes and profiles and all of that. You know, I guess, you know, for the, you know, armchair, you know, HR person who's only really had experience on it, you know, from the, you know, recipient end of things, I guess I've always regarded the process as one of, as a process of elimination first, and then a process of elections of selection second, right? Where there's a gajillion resumes for all of these jobs. And I imagine that's particularly an issue for LinkedIn because you're a desirable place to work. A lot of people want to, you know, come there and work. And yet somehow there's, you know, again, this kind of process of elimination would get you to a point where you've got now a manageable group number of people to have to be able to evaluate to see if they would fit. How does that process work for you so that you're making sure that the people that you get the closest look at aren't, you know, they're the right people and you didn't miss them somewhere earlier in the process?
Gosh, I think that's the magic. I'm sure we miss people. I'm sure we miss people. I think it's the stories they tell. It's beyond the profile. So if you're blogging, if you're writing, if you are following certain topics and contributing to certain topics, it tells me a lot about who you are and what your passions are. So I look for on my team, you know, what are you passionate about? Why are you passionate about it? How that inform you? Do you come across humble, but with confidence? Like, I know I don't know something, right? But I'm smart enough to figure out how to get to the answer, and I'm confident enough to ask for help. And I like to be an athlete, meaning that any job I'm willing to jump in and do, I just am not so narrow. And so I look for elements of those in the candidates that we pull in from experience. It depends on the need. I think that some people want to have been there, done that. So if I'm going in a certain direction and say I'm looking at bots and automation and digitization of HR, it'd be great to have one or two people that have already done that for another company and made their mistakes there, you know, learn from their mistakes and bring that wisdom to LinkedIn. That would be awesome. But I think of everyone as a culture add or a skill add. No two people are alike. And so I try to figure out what is the right blend. So it's not copy exact. I mean, my entire staff, I have a pretty large direct report team, about 12, and they call themselves the Island of Misfit Toys because they're so different from each other, and yet they create magic. And I love that.
So how do you, you know, and I'm sure one of the other challenges is on one hand, there are these very things that, again, someone being curious and collegial and some things that are very common to the type of employees that are successful at LinkedIn. And at the same time, you're also trying to bring diversity into the equation. So how does that factor into it for you? And I do know you do a diversity report every year. And so how do you square that? You know, how do you try to, because I guess it's particularly in a growing organization, you're always trying to, I think it's a great example of what you gave, this idea of a skill add, right? We're trying to expand your kind of collective brain as an organization all the time, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and perspective. So diversity, so at LinkedIn, we look at diversity as what makes you and I unique. And it's not just color of our skin. It's not our gender alone. It's like how we were raised. It's where we were raised, social economic conditions. It is whole bunch of different beliefs, learning differences, you name it, and introversion, extroversion, they play a part in how you show up and solve problems and innovate solutions. So if you want to cultivate a diverse workforce, you got to make sure your pipeline is out there reaching that diverse workforce and having the right storytelling. Like, not only do we want you, but you can not only survive, but we actually want you to thrive while at LinkedIn. So then you're really into storytelling. Is there someone similar like me at LinkedIn that has rocked their career? Had they do it? Because changing jobs is one of the biggest moments of uncertainty we have as adults, right? As well as going into university for the first time. And so they're looking for signals. And so as a recruiting team, as an organization, we got to give enough signals that you will survive and thrive at LinkedIn. So we take care of that. Inclusion is the act of the verb of inviting you to the table. And for us, it's about treating you fairly, respectfully. It's about pay parity. It's about, you know, making sure that we, every decision point is a learning opportunity to remove bias, address bias, look at the opportunity and grow from where we've been, not continue to repeat our same patterns. And then we've added belonging this year in 16 to the diversity conversation, because it's not enough to be invited. You have to be your authentic self to get me to open up and bring my unique point of view to the table. I have to feel psychologically safe. And so belonging and creating that culture actually increases your funnel for diversity and making sure our programs match that.
You know, I think that's such a key thing. I always felt that there was such a focus on diversity for so long, and yet it was almost like the dog who caught the car. Now that we're diverse, what do we do with, like, what do we do with that? How do we tap into that and really make that work for us in a big way? So I guess in some respects, it seems like you're describing that as being, you know, really part of what you just talked about.
Yeah, because it's the algorithm is the whole thing. And so when I have my peers go, maybe I'll call my program diversity and belonging. And I'm like, no, it's this full algorithm. It's like, understand what it means to manage and hire and attract diverse people, right? Diversity of thought, experience, et cetera. Yeah. That's harder to do. Like, we're wired to pattern recognize because it's more efficient and less risk. Now you're going to take more risk, take more time to hire this diverse workforce. Now, when you invite them in, you better be fair, right? You got to have really good practices. And then to unleash that superpower, you got to make them feel safe and welcome to our team. You change your language, you change your modus operandi and how you run meetings. You open up perspectives. You seek others' contrary point of view in a safe way. That unleashes it. If you don't do all three, you're kind of hosed.
That's good. You know, the issue of meetings is a really interesting one because, you know, as I talk to employees from different companies, you know, all over the world, some will tell me meetings, they're the worst. They keep me from my real work. I hate going to them. I mean, you'll get the whole list of them. Yeah. Others say they're a necessary part of being heard and being part and what knowing what's going on in this company and being part of what's going on and being a leader and being all of these things. And it's such a wide, you know, a big difference between those companies where meetings are just like the bane of their existence and other places where they're such a necessary and vital part of how they operate. I assume that meetings, I'm going to make the assumption that meetings are an important part of the collegiality and work that you all do.
Yeah, I would be surprised if there was a business out there that didn't do meetings. Like you and I are having, yeah. Right? Sure. And so it's the most used tool. It's the most engaged tool we use as leaders. Way outpaces a email or a chat or, you know, some kind of electronic conversation. And if you can leverage a meeting the right way, you don't get those naysayers. If you have the right balance of actions and, you know, education and engagement, those people would say meetings are the greatest things in sliced bread. But unfortunately, we're not always good at using our time wisely. People like to hear themselves talk.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So getting back to the, selecting people, how involved are your team members involved in selecting the new people that they are likely to be working with and spending a lot of time with together?
A ton. I mean, so we look at the criteria. What is it that we're looking for? What is a culture add? Making sure we have the right language. We do analytics based on the kinds of profiles we pull and then try to correlate or look at some relationship between performance, promotability, et cetera, and success against those profile criteria. And were they actually indicators of performance or not? And if not, why are you even look at those? Really, what does influence you to make a decision on a hire or not to hire? And then track those. So we're trying to get the analytics to be a little more refined. So we understand, one, if bias creeps in, address it. If there's really the softer skill that we have not articulated well enough that actually is a driving to success, can we make or buy it, right? Can we buy it enough that we can filter through LinkedIn? Or is there something we can do in our learning and development to make more of it where there's weaknesses?
So So let's say now, so I'm a member of your team. You want to bring this new person on. We're all like, yes, this is great. So now we're 6 months, a year, and we're working together. What are the kinds of things that I may be asked or will be asked of me, or what the culture provides in terms of us getting to know one another really well, maybe professionally, personally, so that we can build trust and we can really start to understand how to work together and where its strengths and weaknesses are, and all, and just get that whole team firing on all cylinders?
We do it in a couple, many different ways. I'll give you some examples to tee it up for you. So we started with our onboarding program at LinkedIn, and we're introducing a way to get your name badge, not put your title on your badge, because what you do is temporary. Who you are is forever. And so getting to know you, the human, is really important and why you're excited to join LinkedIn. And so we're going to start asking our new hires, you know, pick stickies that demonstrate your personality. Like, I'm an athlete, you know, I'm an introvert, I'm lefty, I'm the firstborn, lastborn, whatever it is that you want to rock. And then you can write your own stuff in. And it changes the conversation in your cohorts and tables. So I go, hey, Leo or Bob, I'm Pat, I'm a lefty, I'm a sports freak, and I was the champion bowler in high school. You'd be like, no kidding. I'm like, you know, and our relationship changes. And yeah. So then, and we do a lot more on onboarding about our culture and vision, but bringing humanity to the table sooner rather than later is really important. Then we are in our manage-in program, giving managers tools to lead diverse teams and bring the human back into leading. And again, have those stickies, those badges. If you're building a team, doing a team building, how do you know them? And we have exercises that we do that's either 7-minute dialogues or understanding your shadow. And these are where we go around, we pair off with two people, and I will share with you maybe 7 minutes of things you never would have asked me in a business setting. And I'm like, all right, you don't know that I was born in Wilmington, Delaware. You don't know, you know, like things that you would never think to ask. And that's that dialogue again shifts the humanity. Yes. And you do that often enough, the team starts building a muscle. And then in my staff meeting, I do it every week, I do gratitude. And so we go around the table, virtual table, and it's gratitude, personal and professional. So the personal side, give me a sneak peek into what's happened in your life. And on the professional, the only rule I have is that it's for someone outside your team. So I'm grateful for the comms team for helping me do blank, or I'm grateful for the recruiters because they got me this amazing talent. And I'm grateful, you know, so you kind of give appreciation and insights into something that really meant something to you. And so you start my staff meetings, you know, with that piece of gratitude.
Well, I think this whole idea of dimension and who people are and using that to break down barriers is certainly, you know, critical. The other thing that to me falls into that, maybe crosses over a little bit professionally, though, is oftentimes when we work with people, we see them for the job they're doing right now. Now, they could have been in the workplace 10, 15, 20 years before that doing any one of a gajillion things. Yeah. That when I'm going to put a team together, if I knew that that person had experience at this before they ever came to LinkedIn, God, I'd invite them to be part of, you know, this meeting we're going to have or this initiative we're about to take on. And so in some respects, does what you're talking about with those, you know, questions that you may not ask me or whatever, does some of that start to feed into that so that we get to know people beyond just how you know them at the company?
Yes. And we're encouraging, highly encouraging our own employees and anyone we could talk to about the engaged quality member on LinkedIn. So if you're an engaged quality member, you send signals out in the atmosphere more than just a name and a title and years of experience. You actually describe some of what you've done, what makes you excited. You add more adjectives, you use your summary to tell your story, you have more descriptors and links to things that you've blogged about or follow. So I have a holistic picture of you as a person. So writing becomes your new evolved CV, so to speak. You become, it becomes an echo of you. And so I can tell a lot by what people write about and how they talk. Communication skills are really important in any business, you know, point of view. Sure. So we share that. And also we all, and when we introduce new hires, like, what's not on your LinkedIn profile that you want to share? And we do that with every new hire. That's one of our favorite questions.
Well, I just, first of all, I think the LinkedIn profile is such a great, expansion of what is typically communicated on a resume, right? It really allows you to communicate much more dimension about yourself and who you are and what you care about and what your priorities are and your creativity. And for all of these things that I think you've got a real opportunity to showcase on the LinkedIn profile, which worked really well. You know, one of the things too, and I recall was, I think it was a piece in Harvard Business Review a number of years ago where it talked about cross-functional work teams and how they would sit people down and then they would say to the person in marketing, hey, what do you think that this finance person does all day long? And they would have no idea, no clue. Yet they're supposed to kind of depend on one another and work together and all that. And there really isn't, understanding. Do you think people at LinkedIn are pretty good about knowing what everyone's responsibilities are and how best to access people when they need them?
My hypothesis, my theory on that one would be yes, because the profile is so robust and we've learned to navigate the profile more than most companies, because 100% of our employees have a profile and they understand what is quality and the echo that the profile creates. So that's part of it. I think that you're still going to have ignorance on what it takes to be a cost accountant, right? I might need one. I might need an FP&A person for my budget, but I may not know how they do their job. But I think what we've gotten much better at as a leadership team, and I know I've done it in my own function, I have partners that sit at my staff meeting every week. That's my finance, my legal, my comms, my analytics. So they are inputting into our strategy and our three-year roadmap. They're inputting into the risks of programs and how they support it. And when you make a proposal for an initiative or an org design, they've been taught to give me the business problem or the opportunity, and then who are the stakeholders, what kind of change is going to impact them, high, medium, or low, and is it a plus or minus impact or neutral impact, and if it's a positive, why? Like, can you articulate why this is good, and then who do you need to implement? Who I need to implement was the weakest muscle for a long time. Mm. Because people think they could operate in a silo, and I'm like, all right, you don't need anyone in comms? Oh, I need a comms plan. Oh, I bet you do. Do you need anyone in L&D to create that tool? I do. And all of a sudden I put dots in everybody's interdependency and they saw this fabric of work that created, a single output. And they're like, oh, that's what we do together.
Yeah. And you can make systems thinkers out of everyone, which is so important. I mean, because they all can learn also that what they may do in their department has an impact on other places. And they would be well advised to, get that out ahead of time, One question I have too, that's kind of a personal interest is, when you look at companies here in the US and around the world, I mean, it's well north of $100 billion that they spend in terms of executive development and training and all for people. And you get these people and you want them to get better. You want them to grow in their organization. Now, that can involve sometimes offsites where people go offsite and they train and they come back and all. I guess my experience with this has been that sometimes, and now especially in a world where we can be challenged to have fewer people with more responsibility and doing more work, that, okay, they prepare to go off for training so that they're ready to go and do that. They go for their day or two or whatever that happens to be. They come back. Now they got to catch up on all the emails and all the stuff they missed while they were gone. And there was some really cool stuff they learned while they were at this offsite. And there are things that somebody felt were important for them to know. Yet oftentimes, once everyone gets sucked back into their work, it becomes really difficult to take some of those things and actually make it a part of how they, as individuals and as a team, start changing the way they do things. So how do you go about dealing with that challenge, right? I mean, how do you get them to really work together to implement some of the amazing ideas and practices that they learn in training that can find their way into the organization so you can really see the ROI for that?
Make them a teacher is my short answer. Hmm. So I've been in smaller orgs and tighter budgets. I've contracted and expanded budgets throughout my career. And one of the best things for learning retention is to become the teacher. So if I'm spoken to, I might retain 30%. If I do a hands-on exercise, it goes up to 40-50%. If I have to summarize for you and echo back 70%, something like that. But if I actually have to teach you so you can repeat it and do it on your own, that's 90% retention as a teacher. So I will say, look, all right, Nina, you want to go to this, conference on automation, AI, and advanced analytics. That's great. Five of your peers also want to go. I can't afford it. But let's have you go. And the task that you have in front of you is to codify what you learned and train us, teach us three salient things that you think are repurposable across this org. And so go off, come back, give us a quick report out, and then train us 2 weeks later or 3 weeks later. And that's success for you to go to this conference. It's not enough for you to get developed. It's got to scale. And what's funny is that they get super excited and nervous about the teaching and the retention, the energy. You know, they reuse each other's tools or templates, how to train others. And, can I bring in the speaker? Can I reuse the template? And I said, no, you have to change their slides and make it yours. You're just not lifting and shifting.
That's right. Exactly. Well, what's great about that? Obviously, it's not only benefits the students, as it embeds the learning for the person who's teaching, but it also gives them the courage to implement those practices in their own lives and in their own work. And I think, that's a huge value of that. Earlier in the year, actually just about a month ago or so, we had Linda Darling Hammond from Stanford. Yeah, she's wonderful, but very much talked about this idea of how learning, embeds that learning, gives us the courage to act. And of course, the more practice people have being collaborators, the more that they can encourage and inspire collaboration among their team members, as well. And that's also, very, big part of it. I thought the shift a little bit away from kind of, LinkedIn internal, as fascinating as that's been though. But just in terms of, the platform and kind of what's next, again, I love it. I really enjoy, engaging on LinkedIn. One of these days I'm going to figure out how to crack the code and be listed among the key influencers on LinkedIn. But in the meantime, I'm going to stay with it and, really enjoy doing that. I enjoy the community. I enjoy the way we engage one another. What do you see as what's next for LinkedIn when it comes to, fostering this idea of people connecting and collaborating in this platform that you've done such a great job building?
Gosh, there's so much there. Where should I start? I think, one is seeking your network, understanding the power of your network, the use case of your network, showcasing the stories about leveraging network. People use the network differently, even by gender. And there's gender differences in how we do our own profiles. And so women, there was a study we did for the economic graph saying that women tend not to boast a lot of their successes on the profile. They're just like, give me the facts, not I led and I developed. And, those words, you look at a male one, it's like, and I recreated the web. I don't know, I'm making this up.
Right.
But energy is different. And so if you, for LinkedIn, identifying those nuances and talent flows and insights and giving that to the community. Imagine giving professional women the insight of what signal you're sending. And if you can actually figure out better words that you feel confident in to showcase who you are, you will have less risk of being underemployed or underpaid, right? We had day of equality pay, but 20 cents is a big delta between us and men. And so imagine if that was a default gap because we didn't showcase our strengths. Like, imagine if we use LinkedIn as a training tool. Imagine if we navigated you and said, could you phrase it this way? Here's a profile you might want to look at. We're looking at a partnership with Microsoft about how do you write your CV and what words we use and what do we think is greatness, and give us like a word editor, to give more power to what you're saying and positioning. You're helping students look up and say, okay, I want to be chief marketing officer one day. Can I look up and out on LinkedIn and find out their career path? What degree did they get? How are they connected? Do they have a traditional path or is this lattice path I'm hearing about? Does it really matter? And so LinkedIn is going to give you more insights, more talent insights to transform and own your career because it's no longer a traditional ladder anymore. And so I think LinkedIn needs to provide more insights to people seeking better opportunity.
So to the gender question, Is there gender differences between those who tend to write their LinkedIn profiles in the first person versus the third person?
That's a great question. I bet my hypothesis would be it's more men saying I.
I think you're right.
I would have to validate that, but that would be my gut reaction to that.
You know, it's funny. So mine is in the first person. And the reason is because I just feel that that feels more like the personality of the platform, that I'm engaging with people in conversation, not so much. Sometimes it's uncomfortable to do the I thing, but I also feel like if I were around a group of people, it would be weird if I were talking in the third person. So I tend not to do that. So
no, you're right. And I think when I talk and develop leaders on my staff and coach others, what I try to tell introverts and women in general is think about what people have said about you and reflect that on your profile. Mm-hmm. I am told I am blah. And yeah, so therefore it doesn't feel like you're bragging or making stuff up. It feels validated. Others have said this about you. You're confident about it. You feel good about it. That's something they're like, I can write that then. You know, it's a different perspective on how to write. But I use my profile differently too. I use my summary to tell my current story. So I update my summary on my profile probably every 3 to 4 months and say I'm onboarding 300 interns, or we just got acquired by Microsoft, or we're just doing this. So I use it as a mini blog opportunity.
Yeah. And again, I think too, LinkedIn is certainly far more than jobs and career path and all that. I think there's a number of ways, to your point, that we can learn how to leverage, you know, our network and learn how to extend our reach and build trust with people. Does LinkedIn have a different point of view today with regard to who you should invite to be connections? In other words, do you think over time it's gotten a little more liberal that you can use your you can try to extend your reach a bit with people who clearly have like-minded, you know, shared, ideas or you know, interests, versus people that you absolutely have to know, because then that would feel limiting.
You know? It's very limiting. We definitely see the circles of engagement broader to interest groups and who you're following and what you're following and what you're writing about. And I'm like, oh, he really cares about automation and she's really looking at the future work as well. And so I'm going to reach out because I'm working on something like this. I don't know them personally, but professionally it resonates. And so we see more of those connections happening, which is the learning, the development you want.
Right. No, and I do love the use of groups. How many groups? I mean, I can't even imagine. It's probably countless. But how many groups are on LinkedIn?
Ballpark, I don't know. Really? I haven't gotten a late count. Now you've got me. Now I feel bad about this podcast.
Well, like you said, you know, one of the things you said you were looking for in people is maybe you don't always have the right answer, but you'll always know how to find it. So we'll all figure it out. We'll get to it. That's really great. I guess, just to wrap up a little bit for today and really, you know, appreciate your time. Are there any particular, what's next for LinkedIn that you'd like to share, you know, with our audience?
Looking at the platform, the conversation of the platform is magical. Telling your story is magical. It is a great supplement and support of your CV, right? So being very aware how you show up, it's your professional reflection. And I would say that LinkedIn on the talent solutions side is looking at the whole talent ecosystem from transparency of compensation and really informing the audience. And with the millennial generation, that transparency is key and will help inform pay parity for years to come. It will be the integration of LinkedIn Learning into the profile, into my experience on LinkedIn. So if I aspire to be a marketer and I have 6 out of the 10 skills, is there a drop-down menu that says, Pat, why don't you take this course and get certified? And it increases your odds to pursue your path by X, right? So that would be great. We were looking at a diversity product on LinkedIn. And how do you look at the talent flow? Should we do self-ID or is it more about the blind? So you can strip out last names and pictures and schools. But if you do blind recruiting, part of the concern is that when you come on site, I will still have my bias. You haven't fixed the inner workings of that company. And so if you have intentionality of hiring and developing and thriving a diverse workforce, then discovering them, understanding them, embracing them, and learning how to navigate a complex workforce is actually to your benefit. You'll have more upside. So we're exploring all of what that looks like and doing user testing. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, and I think for all of us who use it, I think it's an invaluable resource for us. And I think it kind of goes back to what you talked about, where LinkedIn gives me an opportunity to express who I am, not just what I do. And I think with that, my hope too is that that's why recruiters find it valuable. That's why people can help make connections more effectively, because they can connect on that level, not just on checking off the boxes and where you've been in your career and what your resume, but you know, what do you really care about? And you know, what are you interested in? What drives you? How curious are you? And I think to the point also that you give, you know, people such a platform to be able to write and express themselves. And it's very easy for everything from recommendations to someone's own writing, to some of what they say about themselves, to the various mediums they use, whether it's, you know, art or video or their own words. I just think allows for really great to mention there. And thanks for all you guys do at LinkedIn to help us do that.
My pleasure. Our pleasure.
All right. Well, look, thank you very, very much. And if there's, like I said, I just look forward to, you know, staying active on the program, on the platform, and, you know, just really grateful that you spent time with us today. So thanks.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye. Wonderful. Bye.
Thanks for joining us today. To learn more about Peer Advantage, to submit questions to Leo and our guest, and to subscribe to the Year of the Peer podcast, please visit us at leobottari.com. That's LeoBottari.com. This podcast is produced by me, Randy Cantrell. Hosted, of course, by Leo Bottari. Music provided by Kevin MacLeod, Vibe Ace. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.